Welcome to the Dildorks, dorky discourse on sex, dating, and masturbating. My name is Kate Sloan. I'm a sex journalist, a sex podcaster, and to quote Carrie Bradshaw, I have to go do a podcast. They're like jury duty now. My co-host today is my wife, poet, programmer, photographer, beautiful woman, trans icon, MB Bischoff. Hello.
I try to be. Thank you for having me again.
And I'm so excited today because our guest today is the host and creator of the award-winning podcast, Gender Reveal, a co-founder of trans-inclusive media consulting company, Sylveon Consulting, a journalist who covered, among other things, the 2020 protests in Portland, and a co-founder of Girl Dad Press, which published the Lambda Literary Award-winning anthology, Too Trans, Too Furious, and is about to release its next project, which we're talking about today, an anthology called Sex Change in the City. Tuck Woodstock. Hi, Tuck. Thank you for being here.
Hi. Hi. Thanks for having me. Such a treat. Such an honor.
We've both been reading the book like for most of today and yesterday, loving it, laughing so much. I did want to open with the classic question, like, tag yourself, which Sex and the City character do you feel like you are? Or like, which one do you most relate to?
So I mentioned this in the intro with a full footnote with a URL, but my friend Sarah Esikoff, who is the person who suggested that we use Sex Change in the City as the subject for this anthology, also wrote a sort of BuzzFeed style quiz several years ago in which you're ostensibly taking one of the Which Sex and the City Girlies Are You quiz, but the only results you can get are you are Miranda or you lied on this quiz, because her argument is kind of like the other three are just like caricatures of what a person would be. Mm-hmm. And Miranda is the only one who is like grounded enough to be a real person. That said, a lot of people see themselves as one of the other three in a way that makes me believe that they must be out there, you know, like if enough people think they're a Carrie, then there must be real Carries, etc.
But
I would say for me, I agree that Miranda is the only person that seems like a person to me. So I would have to tag myself as a Miranda.
Yeah, I agree. Like, my first instinct is to be like, well, I must be a Samantha because like I talk about sex all the time and I'm like comfortable with sex, which like even the sex columnist Carrie is not really.
Right.
But also, I agree with you. Miranda's kind of like the most grounded of them. I kind of relate to Aiden a little bit in that like wild shit is constantly happening to him because of all the drama in his personal life, especially with Carrie. And he's just kind of like, all right, whatever. Like he just kind of rolls with it. I like that about Aiden. But yeah, MB, what do you think? Who are you?
Miranda. Yeah, similar reasons. Yeah,
I think you are definitely a Miranda. Yeah.
Yeah, very, very clearly.
I mean, yeah, if we're expanding past the four girlies, it could be like, well, like all transmasculine people in this book, I'm obviously Steve, sort of a short guy who's trying to understand these beautiful women. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
The only one with a job. So I guess in that case, it's not me, as I'm not the only one with a job. But I respect Steve for that.
Yeah, I love Steve. I'm so sad what they ended up doing with him. And just like that, I missed more Steve. But yeah. Yeah, since we're talking about Steve and Miranda and stuff, this book contains many different people's arguments for why certain ostensibly cis characters in the show might actually be trans. Like, I think for me, the most interesting ones were the Charlotte, the Miranda, and the Steve analyses. And I'm wondering if, like, there's one that you think has the most textual evidence or that you most believe could be trans.
Well, what I think is interesting in the book is that we have Steve with a pussy erotica and Steve with a dick erotica. Yeah. And I think that is indicative of how Steve is clearly some kind of trans figure, but we're not sure what direction it's going in. Like, I don't know. I think I see Miranda the most just because Miranda is also the queerest in the original series. And it's easy when you have a tall woman with short hair who's giving queer to be like, that's a boy. And then Steve and Miranda can be like a beautiful T for T couple. And again, like, we don't have to figure out like in what direction anyone's going. We just know they're a beautiful T for T couple in some way. Mm-hmm. But also, I think this predates the book. Many people have argued compellingly that Samantha is a stealth trans woman. Mm-hmm. And yeah. I can see that as well. That I don't know that we even make that argument in the book because it actually seems too obvious. So we kind of play on it, specifically Herod Walker and Alex Better shared their script for sort of an alternate version of an episode in which Samantha is canonically a trans woman. And yeah, it's barely an argument. It's really just like, it's so obvious, girl, you know?
Yeah, I love that. Was one of my favorite pieces, actually.
Me too.
Like, the way that it recontextualized that terrible, terrible transphobic episode of the show and does this like a Christmas Carol style thing where mm-hmm. she's visited by the ghost of transsexual past and transsexual present and transsexual future. And it was so funny and so well written. And yeah, that was definitely one where I was like cackling out loud while MB was like reading in the other room, also cackling at a different part of the book.
Yeah,
that was performed around here, right? Come on, everybody. Were you in the room when that was performed or did you hear about it afterward?
No, I went. It was exciting. It happened after we conceptualized the book, but before submissions were due. And Alex and Heron had independently from us written this script that was basically just word for word that episode, except for these two chunks where you go off into this fantasy world. And so also, thank God there were two of them who made it together, because we do have a word count per person, but there were two of them. So I was like, great, you have twice as many words. Shove as much of the original content as you can. And we got like pretty much all of it in, which is great. So yeah, the only stuff we're missing from that script is the stuff that was just line by line, the real movie. What was interesting in the room, MB, I don't remember if you were there, but a lot of the lines when it was performed at Come On Everybody, we're getting laughs as if Heron had written it. You know, like as if this was supposed to be like a trans in joke. And it's like, that's in the original script from like 2001.
Yeah.
That was kind of fun to be like, oh, these are still hitting, actually.
Yeah. And especially like when performed in that context, it like takes on a different meaning potentially. Yeah.
It was performed by all trans women, just for the audience. It's Chiquitita, Macy Rodman, Cherry James, and Joan Summers. And Macy Rodman has such incredible accent work that
shut up.
At one point she becomes Caitlyn Jenner. And I didn't even hear that they said it was Caitlyn Jenner. Like, I just couldn't hear that line from where I was standing, but it was such a pitch perfect Caitlyn Jenner impression. I was immediately like, there she is.
Wow, that's tough.
Speaking of like Sex in the City right now, was this the first time that you watched the show as it was preparing for this book? And what was that like watching it in like current year?
Yeah. So as Kate mentioned, our first book was about, I almost said Too Trans Too Furious. Our first book was about The Fast and the Furious. It was called Too Trans Too Furious. And we wanted to do another themed anthology, but we were looking for the perfect subject material. It needed to be like a rich text of gender. It needed to be really popular. There needed to be enough of it that people could have a lot of different takes. It can just be like one movie or whatever. And it took a year to find the right subject matter. And I was asking everyone all the time at parties, like, what should we do for this anthology? And nothing was quite right. And then I was hanging out with my friend Sarah in the park at HBK. And she was like, what if you did Sex and the City? And I was like, yeah, I don't know. I've never watched it. Like, probably not, but LOL. And then I went home and I watched two episodes. And the texts are in the acknowledgments in the back of the book where I watched two episodes and I was basically like, haha, absolutely not. And then I watched like four more episodes and was like, okay, absolutely yes.
This is how it begins.
Because there's just so much gender. And I watched a lot of it at like 1.25 to 1.5x because I was like, we don't need to be spending like this much time with these women and their problems. But
on TikTok with something else in the corner.
No, totally. That was the vibe. Yeah. It's like I was like watching baseball on one half of my screen and I was watching these women on the other half and it was working perfectly. Kind of the two genders in that way. Yeah, it was really fascinating because I couldn't tell how much of the fact that these women were living like completely opposite reality lives from me. I couldn't tell how much was because they're straight, because they're cis, because they live in Manhattan, because it was 1999, because they're rich, or because they're fictional characters written by gay guys. Like, I was like, what? So I'm like, did these people ever exist? Do they exist now? Yeah, so I felt like I was like an anthropologist watching, and I expected all of the submissions to also be queer people being anthropologists, but then a lot of them are really earnestly relating to the characters, and I'm like, that never occurred to me. It never occurred to me.
Yeah, well, that was one of the things we were wondering about, actually, is like, since the previous anthology, Too Trans, Too Furious, was all trans contributors, in this book, everyone is queer, but there are some cis writers in the mix. So we were wondering, like, why was it important for you for this book to be open to all queer and trans contributors.
To be so honest, it was just that I knew a lot of really smart queer people who don't describe themselves as trans who I wanted to have the opportunity to include. Mm-hmm. I also, as someone who makes a podcast where we quote unquote only interview trans people, find myself having to justify whenever I want to talk to someone who the audience doesn't necessarily think is trans. They're not fighting me on it. My audience is very, very sweet. But there is kind of a feeling among them that's like, please talk about trans people on the trans podcast. And I do get that. But mm-hmm. I think the most interesting conversations about gender are not necessarily just from people who are 100% clear that they describe themselves as trans. A lot of the mm-hmm. interesting conversations are edge cases where people are not quite sure what they're doing. and that is true, you know, in the broader context outside of the podcast, too. So I didn't want someone to feel like they couldn't contribute, or that I had to like sneak them in somehow, or be like, can you do one shot of HRT as a treat so I can put you in my book? It's just like, I want the people who are excited about this, who have interesting things to say, to be in the book. And we did have one case, not with trans, but with queer, where one person contributed. And then I was like, I'm obsessed with your essay. I'm so excited to have it. And then that person was like, you know, I've thought about it more and like, maybe I'm not queer enough to be in this. And I'm like, don't care. I don't care. Yeah. But if you feel not queer enough, maybe you should take a vow that by the time this book comes out next year, you do something really gay.
That's the answer. And that is the answer. Just have some gay sex and it'll be
That's
fine.
That's all you got to do. Yeah.
My rule is always like, either don't worry about it or be gayer. and so that was really it. I just didn't want to be like litigating. Also, like, trans is to some extent like a Western concept. And I always feel a little weird, like, insisting that people use that language for themselves to participate in something. And in fact, I never actually insist, but it often seems like I am. Like, our grant program, for example, is only open to trans people of color. But if you describe yourself as something else and I'm like, that makes total sense to me, you know, we let it in, no problem. But on its face, it says trans people of color. And it's the same with the book. I just like, I don't want it to accidentally be white, because not that only trans people can be white, but the word transgender mm-hmm. is coming from like a Western context, and I want it to be open to whoever it makes sense for.
Since you mentioned the grant program, I'll ask you a little bit about that. You write in your opening essay about the fact that, like, it feels maybe kind of silly to be publishing this at this particular moment politically, but that maybe we don't have to choose between making hot, silly queer art and doing mutual aid. And you are doing both. You're also running Gender Reveal's 11th grant program. Can you talk a little bit about that, what it is, what it does, how to apply?
Yeah, that intro is me trying to convince myself that it's okay to make this book. Like, you can like hear me talking about it with me. I did a recent Gender Reveal interview with Morgan Basicus, where straight up on the podcast, I'm like, Morgan, is it okay?
What am I doing? Am I doing okay?
Yeah, is it fine? But yeah, so the grant program comes out of the Gender Reveal podcast. And it is, as I said, for trans folks of color anywhere in the world who are doing any kind of community work, organizing work, or artistic work that is supporting their communities or is exploring gender in some way. As it has gone on, this grant program, it has continued to emphasize a lot of instances in which we are handing some money to a different mutual aid group to then hand the money. Like, a lot of things that get chosen are like not just like, I need $1,000 to buy a camera. It is like, I'll give you $1,000 and then you're going to give, you know, $100 to 10 people who are going to give $10 to 10 people. Like, that just ends up being what we're funding. Right. But that said, like, there's a big range, and we have supported just like straight up artistic work before many times. The point of this grant program is that we're taking 1 month of the Gender Reveal Patreon income and trying to hand it out. Because I just want the show to be reciprocal isn't the right word, because it kind of seems like that's just one-to-one, but I want it to be like a community exchange. I don't want it to be like just me asking trans people for $5. I would like it to be an ecosystem where we are just passing $20 around in a circle and hoping it sticks. And this year, I really also managed to bully people into giving us extra money, which has been awesome. So we actually have like more than $3,000 on top of the Patreon money that we get to disperse, which is really cool. I like to bait people by saying these grants are only $500 to $1,000. If that doesn't feel like a lot of money to you, feel free to send us $500 to $1,000. And it has worked this year, which is a huge slay.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so you can apply by going to genderpodcast.com/grant, and there's a link at the top. That page also has a list of every grant we've ever dispersed over the last 7 years, and so you can get an idea of what we've funded in the past. I'm not a judge. The judges are all trans people of color who are paid for their time to go through the grants, and it's open through October 31st, and then we announce by the end of the year, and it's normally like right at the end because everyone is busy.
I'll just say, if you're thinking about applying, just apply right away. Don't wait until October 31st. Just apply now.
I try to make it a pretty easy process. We have to have some amount of writing so we can get an idea of what's going on, and also to make sure that you're like a real person that is really trying to do something.
Not an AI.
We do try to make it a shorter application than most grants. A lot of the questions are easy. They are like, who are you? What's your deal? Okay, cool. And also, I tried to emphasize this earlier, but I may have not actually gotten to it. We are kind of increasingly trying to fund existing programs and ongoing programs just because we know that those do exist. And there's no strings attached. Like, people can do whatever they want with the money, and you never have to prove that you did what you said you would do with the money. But it is nice to like give money into existing programs because it does seem like we trust that you know how to do it. You know?
Higher chance of actually helping some people.
Yeah,
making
exactly.
some stuff. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. And especially when we're trying to verify that something really exists, it's easier when it already exists and we can like see it on Instagram to be like, oh, okay, this is a program that we like want to support, versus someone being like, you can't find any proof that I exist or do anything, but I would love to help my community. And it's like, that is like probably true. It just is tough, you know, so.
Yeah.
Well, clearly your podcast is doing a lot more good for the world than Che Diaz's podcast. And just like that.
I don't know. Che Diaz's podcast gave like millions of gay people something to talk about for a long time.
I am really curious to hear, like, what do you think about Che Diaz as a character? Because you are a fellow polyamorous trans podcaster. And
they came for my ass. Like, he was really disrespectful.
Like, I love Sarah Ramirez's performance in many scenes in the show. And I think that like their flirting is so good in particular. And there are things that I really like about their characterization. But like, I don't know. What do you think about their writing and about the character in general?
Yeah, I mean, I don't have anything to say that hasn't already been said a million times in funnier ways. And as possibly like including the things that are cited in the book, we have ended up with two pieces that talk about Che Diaz. Originally, I thought we maybe not would not have any, which was shocking to me that everyone was like, we just were over it. We can't even think about it. But we ended up with a couple, which is nice. That's the right amount. And yeah, I was kind of baffled by what seemed like the writer's decision to introduce a series of the most annoying non-binary people you could ever hear to be like, oh, you want diversity? I'm gonna give you that. And I kind of imagine it coming, you know, this is pure just fantasy, but I imagine it coming from a couple different angles where there's these like, some of the writers are just like imagining what a non-binary person would be. And then Sam Irby's in the writing room being like, I know these bitches. And like, here's like some of their shit. Cause you can kind of tell when it's like an authentic joke versus like, you know, an imagined joke. I think that Charlotte's kid changing their name, not to dead name a fictional character, but from Rose to Rock is actually really funny. I think that is real.
It's just taking the sock meme and making it real, you know?
Well, I remember very distinctly when Rock came out as Rock, and on an Instagram post, someone commented like, this is so cool because like my 13-year-old just changed their name to Soda, and I'm like, I'm gonna die.
I want to meet that kid.
Yeah. So like Juno Carmel came into the book really late to write this piece about how Che Diaz is like horrible non-binary representation, but Rock is actually awesome non-binary representation. And I agree. I feel like they did a great job with this kid who's just kind of like working it out in real time and like putting up with their parents as their parents like blunder through it poorly. But also it could be worse. You know, they're not trying to be transphobic. They got Rabbi Hari Neff for the bay mitzvah.
So good.
I don't know what anyone was doing with Che. But I will say, like, on talking about Sarah as a person, it's so funny how sort of like even in Sex and the City, I'm talking about like I don't know anyone who is, you know, like these women of Sex and the City, and I certainly don't know Sarah Jessica Parker personally or Kim Cattrall, but the two cast members from Sex and the City or And Just Like That that you will just bump into in the world is Sara Ramirez and Miranda. What is her fucking
Cynthia
name?
Cynthia Nixon.
Thank you.
You're so welcome.
I was like imagining her talking about her trans kid on like at this protest, and I was like, and this woman could be anyone. Yeah, Cynthia Nixon. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Cynthia Nixon and Sara are like around, and that is like queer world. It's like it doesn't really matter how famous you are. If you're in queer world, you're just gonna like be around. You're just gonna be like at the function, you know? And I'm like, that is so true. Che Diaz would just like be at the party, you know? Yeah. Che Diaz would be on stage at Joe's Pub. You know?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
Telling jokes that are not jokes.
That are not jokes. Yeah. Yeah. No, it's astonishing how bad. And that is one of the things where it's like, I would love to hear, like, how on purpose was that in the writer's room? Like, is the fact that Che Diaz never told a joke, like, intentional?
Is that in the brief? Is that?
Yeah.
What are we doing here? Yeah. Since we're on the sex podcast, there's this piece in the book, Help My Miranda is a Man That I Love by Julian Palacios. In it, there's this quote, more of a sub for sub edging guy anyway. And it made me think of this tweet of yours, this blue sky post of yours, Skeet. Are we saying Skeet?
I'll say Skeet.
From March, in which you said you were interested in writing an essay about top for top dynamics. Talk us through that.
Okay. First of all, I want to back up and say that I remember like having a long conversation with Julian in the edit. I don't remember like where it started, but I remember like having to litigate like exactly like what I think it maybe just started as like sub for sub. And then I was like, how would this look? And we were like, well, how do two subs even have sex? You
know, right, exactly.
We like had this like big conversation about it. And I was like, that is like the joy of my life is like editing very sincerely the stupidest possible shit. Like I remember in Two Trans, Two Furious. No, it was in this one, actually. Sorry. I remember in Sex Change in the City and the edits of a different erotica. It was like, I was like pulling him towards my mouth. And I was like, what part are you pulling towards your mouth? You know, right. Like the whole body. And then it was like, and it's like, I'm covered in this like sticky substance, but they're like at a bar. And I'm like, I can't tell if this is beer or cum or like both mixed together. Like maybe you don't, you know, it was just like incredible edits. But okay, the question was about top for top. Well, I think what happened was that someone at Them, a Them.us writer, interviewed me about top for top and then didn't publish the article. And I was like, who will do the necessary investigative journalism about top for top? But I love for top for top. I just love, in general, being gay. And to me, being gay is when there's no obvious role because you have the same vibe. And I understand that's not the actual definition of being gay. Being gay can be anything. But to me, I'm always like, I'm gay. I'll date any gender as long as they're my gender, you know? So, like, I have a girlfriend, but she's the boyfriend of the relationship. You know, you never know, like, who's going to be doing
anything
what.
Is possible.
And so all that to say is, like, I like a top for top because it is sort of like you're both going in with like a similar set of desires and energies and you're like,
aesthetic.
Who will win? Who will win the fight to make you come first? You know?
Like, yes.
It's just a very specific.
It's so good.
Yeah. Whereas I think that like, obviously I can hook up with a bottom and I'm like, here's my job today. And like, that's fine. Like I'll do the job well, but it does feel more like I know what I'm here to do and less like, an exploration of vibes and discovery, which is like maybe just saying I don't know how to sex with bottoms in a good way, and that is fine. Like that is okay.
Yeah, speaking of the erotica in the book, publishing trans and queer smut has gotten a lot harder online lately. There's all this stuff going on with the payment processors and Patreon, etc. So I'm curious if you were at all concerned about that when you were including erotica in this book.
No, I mean, I think the good news about publishing it as an actual book is you're allowed to put sex in books still. And I, speaking of edits, there's a big conversation with me and a lot of people who I asked to read the intro, where I kind of referenced the fact that conservatives might try to ban books, but they ultimately like can't do it. And people kept being like, well, they can do it. And I'm like, no, they can ban it from a specific library, but they cannot stop me from printing 3,000 of these things. Like, they cannot shut down the printer, and they cannot stop me from using the U.S. Postal Service at this point to
Media
send
mail,
this
baby.
Around. Yeah, exactly. And so to that extent, I think obviously if I was trying to print something that I was making for a wide audience, I could be worried that the wide audience would cut it off. Or if I was making something for young adults, sure. I wouldn't put this in here because it wouldn't make sense. But I think just as something that's for like adult freaks that's being sold like by independent bookstores and on a big cartel store, I think the fact also that there's like three erotic story or two and a half erotic stories, but they're not, it's not all erotica, I think also, yeah. like it's kind of in, it's less than you would think for a book called Sex, Change, and City. It's about the same amount as Too Trans, Too Furious, you know?
It's about the same amount as actual sex in Sex and the City.
No, totally. and yeah, I think because of that, I was just like, this is kind of the amount that you would see in a book. And so I wouldn't be, I'm not worried about the sex part specifically. I could be worried about the trans part specifically. But like I said, I'm like, you can't really get me, which is, I think, my attitude with a lot of my projects is like, if I never enter the system, you can't kick me out of the system. Mm-hmm. And that's my attitude to most things. It's like, you can't fire me from podcast because I never got an actual job in podcast, you know?
Right. Yeah. Good luck. Yeah. For other queer and trans people out there that are thinking about doing something like this, I know you've been through a lot. What would your advice be, if any?
Totally. Yeah. I would say don't become your own press. No, it's fine. I think actually what I would say is that what worked really well for us is the first time we did it when we did everything through pre-sales, and then we could fund the printing and the distributing through the pre-sale money. So that's basically like a Kickstarter model. Like, right. I would say truly just do that, because the second time when we were doing a more traditional distributor route, and this time with a new book when we did more of a traditional distributor route, we had to just decide a number to print and then hope that people bought them, which means that I'm paying for everything out of pocket and hoping that one day I make my money back and kind of like resigning myself to the fact that I won't. And that is not as fun as when you have all the money up front and you know what your budget is. Mm-hmm. And so I think that, I mean, I think people would intuitively do that because most people would need to, like, did not have out-of-pocket amount to print all the books anyway, so it's like not really an issue. But yeah, I would say just like, when you make your little project, make sure that you are budgeting such that you don't suddenly go $15,000 into debt making your own press. Like, ugh. Just don't do it. I was on a Zoom with Nico, my co-editor, yesterday, because we were trying to ship some of our books to our Canadian distributor, and was like, so between how weak the Canadian money is and tariffs, I think we're losing $6 per book. You know, like, oh. But please buy them or else we're losing, you know, $21 per book because they'll just sit there, you know? So, I don't know. I think like, making it legit is not great. But it started with Too Trans, Too Furious was just supposed to be a zine. And I think just make a zine.
That's There's existing distribution networks.
Exactly. Yeah. I would say just make a zine. like, obviously, if someone wants to get more serious about it, I'm happy to talk to them in like a real way and like share everything that I've learned. Because now, like, we were so lucky to have.
You should pay Tuck about
I mean, not if you're trans. I mean, sure. We were so lucky to have Kat and Casey at Little Puss like mentor us the whole time, and like some folks up in Metonymy in Canada who are also trans. And honestly, like, everyone involved is trans. Like, Lit Disco is our Canadian distributor. It's also run by someone who's trans. Like, everyone who is trans has given us so much free time and labor just, like, explaining how to do this. And I'm happy to pass that along because I have so much knowledge in my head now and it's so useless and I always want to talk about it and nobody cares, you know? So, would love to discuss. I would say just make a zine. And also the same thing as with any book, which is that like this will not make you money. And just like remember that even if you do like make a profit, unless it something really, really, really wild happens, your profit will be like a few thousand dollars. And I think that people who aren't in books still think of books as like a job that you can have. And it's like book is not job. Book is like little project that you spend a year on and then it makes you like maybe 1 month of rent and you're like cool, slay, you know?
Exactly.
That's so true. Yeah. MB, I wanted to ask if you would tell us a little bit about your piece in the book, because you do have a piece in the book, which I neglected to mention. And it is a lovely, interesting piece that I think is like a bit different from a lot of the other things in the book.
Yeah, when Tuck was putting this together and had a form up to pitch things, I wanted to pitch something that I felt like I would be the exact right person to do, that like, you know, I would benefit from me being in New York and like my experience and stuff. And so I pitched two ideas. The one that we went with was it's called Not So Cosmopolitan. And it is me going to Midtown Manhattan, a place that I try to stay away from, and hopping on a bus with a bunch of cis people to go on the Sex and the City bus tour. And it was a very interesting day. I don't want to spoil the piece too much because I want you to buy the book. But
it's very funny.
Yeah,
it's
I had a bad cosmopolitan. I met a librarian, and there is a villain of the piece, I would say.
Absolutely. Yeah, I remember when we were going through the pitches. We got to yours, and I was talking to Nico, and before she could even say anything, I was like, we have to take this one because it's so generous that she'll do this for us. Like, it's so generous that people go on the tour.
Yeah. Someone has to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One of my favorite revelations from that piece actually is there's like a trivia question that the tour guide asks. That's like, which of the four main characters has the most sex on the show? And the answer is Charlotte. And I was like, what? Like, I can remember there being a lot of Charlotte sex scenes for sure, but that just doesn't, I don't know. That just doesn't make sense. What an interesting fact.
One thing that I don't think made it into the piece is that the little mini bus that I was on that was outfitted for this tour has a television screen. And on earlier iterations of the tour, like if you had gone a couple of years ago, they would play clips during the tour. So, you know, it'd be like timed with a thing. But then the rights holders told them to stop, knock that off. So it's just, there's just a black TV screen the entire time.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
On the Charlotte thing, I was still finishing the show as I was editing the book because I had to make it through six seasons. And I don't watch TV, really. Like, the only TV I've watched this year is Sex and the City, like, period. And I think, like, the new season of Severance, mostly. You know, like, that's it, you know? Yeah. And so once I read that from MB, I did start to see it. I was like, oh, yeah, it is Charlotte. But I never would have guessed that before. But it becomes obvious. I think Kristen Davis is just, like, down, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, Sarah Jessica Parker is kind of like, you can never show my tits. Like, I don't actually really want to be fucking that much. And I think Kristen Davis is like, whatever.
Yeah, which slay.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to return to an idea that you talk about early in the book, which is the straight people zoo.
Yeah.
And as like, actually, maybe you could just tell us what a straight people zoo is.
Yeah, I would love to. So straight people zoo started in my head as an idea from watching reality television. My roommate and I used to watch that show Married at First Sight, which is the wildest thing you could ever see. And, you know, some of the other classics, Love is Blind, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it really did feel anthropological in terms of, like, I can't believe that this is how straight people are. Mm-hmm. And obviously it's heightened because it's reality TV, but you are seeing glimmers of the ways that straight people think about relationships. Yeah. I've only ever watched one episode of The Bachelorette, but I do remember that the one I watched was like the first episode of whatever season it was. And a guy got sent home for having revealed that he had a girlfriend back home, like up until day of shooting. And the Bachelorette, like, confronted him, and he was like, aren't you dating 19 people right now? And she's like, no, it's different. And, like, that kind of thing I think is so interesting.
Yeah.
So anyway, so when I was watching reality TV about straight relationships, I would say it's going to the straight people zoo. But then you can also expand that to real life. I kind of try to avoid the straight people zoo in real life, but, like, if you've ever been to, like, a straight wedding where you're, like, one of the only queer people there and you're just like, oh, my gosh, this is straight culture. Or doesn't have to be a wedding. It doesn't have to be romantic. It can be just sort of like, oh, you accidentally go to like a bar in Midtown and everyone's straight. And you're like, where am I?
What's happening? What are these conversations? Yeah. Why are there so many fleece vests?
No, exactly. And so there's just a lot of different ways that you can end up at the straight people zoo. You know, an office that you have to work at and most people are straight. You know, like that can be the straight people zoo. And so I was just thinking about Sex and the City as sort of one of the ultimate straight people zoos. Because it really is me trying to dial in and being like, okay, let me try to understand how these people work. They do not get tested for STIs ever. It's no. not, it's not, it's, no. you know, they don't believe in this thing, but they will do, you know, like there's a big list in the intro where it's like, you can, you have to throw out your vibrator because you're coming too much. You have to break yeah. up with this guy because he eats pussy too well. You know, like, it's
like oh, anything but
really
that.
Interesting. So yeah, I just, I really feel like Straight People Zoo is the only way I can get through a lot of those situations, especially in real life, where I have to just be like, okay, this is now like sort of a case study that I'm doing. I cannot mm-hmm. expect to understand them on a peer-to-peer level. I have to just take notes in my journal.
Yeah. What's the most recent time that you felt that way, like in real life?
God, I feel like I just had one and I could, oh, well, I went, anytime I go to a baseball game, that's the Straight People Zoo.
Sure.
And so I was just at a Seattle Mariners playoff game and I was there by myself and I was around a couple other guys who were also there by themselves. So we were making friends and I was like, wow, I'm like doing classic masculinity of like, I can touch this strange man because we high five when the pitcher gets a good strikeout, you know, like it's like, but like, that's all. And, you know, like there was a uh-huh. time when, you know, he's telling me about, you know, something about his wife or whatever. And then I am like talking about my girlfriend and being like, I wonder, I bet his vision of girlfriend is not quite lining up with like, what's right. going on. And then we talk about some player and I had to bite my tongue because my favorite anecdote about that player is that he used to be fucking these lesbians. And I was like, we can't, he can't know that. Like, no, it'll
that's not
really
for him.
Hit different,
that's not for him.
You know? And so it was just, I just felt I was learning a lot about like how to form a friendship with a random straight man surrounded by, you know, 50,000 other straight people where I was like,
really
I can't blow my cover. I have to be normal.
Is there like an aspect of straight culture from the Sex and the City universe that like most strikes fear into your heart? Like, I remember like one of the things that I found so weird was in And Just Like That, there's a throwaway line where we find out that like Carrie doesn't know whether her husband masturbates, like not just how often he's masturbating or how he does it, but whether or not he does it. And I was like, I cannot imagine being in a relationship where I didn't know
that's
these
concerning.
Most basics of facts. Like, I don't get that at all.
No, it's so wild. I mean, unfortunately, the thing that haunts me the most is the thing I already mentioned, which is that nobody's getting tested. Mm. At one point, mm-hmm. Miranda tests positive for, I believe, chlamydia, and she gets out a legal pad and writes down 42 people she slept with and is calling them on her landline phone one by one to be like, do you have chlamydia? Because I have chlamydia. And then meanwhile, Steve is like, what's chlamydia? And can we have sex anyway? And she's asking how many people he's slept with, and the only answer she gets is more than 60. And just the idea of someone who's at more than 60 who's saying, what's chlamydia? Kind of like
unconscionable,
but I have heard like even now, because obviously that was like 2001 and a TV show, but I have heard like even here and now in the real world, the rumor I've heard, and you can tell me if this is true or not, Kate, is that straight people are only getting tested if they have symptoms. And if you're going, if someone is like, I'm gonna go get tested, they're like, oh no, like, are you okay? And it's like, yeah, just doing my due diligence. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So. I've had like really mixed experiences dating straight men, because some of them, if I bring up testing, they're like, oh yeah, for sure. Like, or they're even like, I got tested like 3 months ago, like, here are my yeah. results. And then some of them are like, oh, yeah, like, I guess I could figure out how to do that. Like, I could do that for you. And I'm like, yeah, that's, I don't know.
Figure out how to do that.
Can we talk about the ADHD Jay's, I was about to say Jay's bassist.
Jay's
yeah, the Jay's bassist.
Bassist.
Absolutely.
Because, yeah, he gets, I think, a couple of shout outs in the book. There's this, like, jazz musician who Carrie dated, who, like, as far as I recall, was, like, really into eating pussy and, like, brought her a bottle of bourbon to her door to come eat her pussy. And then she ended up breaking up with him because he like got distracted while going to
make
coffee
period.
For her.
He got distracted. Yeah.
She was like, I can't deal with this ADHD guy anymore. And it just made me so mad watching it, because I was like, I know so many people with ADHD who are like, yeah, they might get distracted, but they could be like really fucking good in bed, and they can be like fascinating people and like interesting conversationalists and all these things. And it's like, I don't know. Do you have thoughts on the ADHD?
Absolutely. Yeah. So first of all, my first thought in the first episode of ADHD Jazz Bases is it's so crazy that Sex and the City is so committed to whiteness that they will have just like the most average looking man. And the narration will be like, he was the hottest man I've ever seen, because they just like, I don't know. They like ran out of white guys and they just are like, here's one laying around. Like, let's use him. And it's like, no offense to this man, but like, I would never be like smoke show. I just be like, that's a guy, you know? But anyway, so that was him, where he's just like a guy wearing a like pork pie hat playing the jazz bass, and Kelly's like, swoon, 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 you know? And I'm like, God. But then, yeah, you have to root for him, because then they date. And by like the second episode, we need a reason for her to break up, to go back to Big. And so it's like just that he's getting distracted. He like wants to play her some cool jazz music, and then wants to like play the saxophone or something. He becomes like a completely different character. Like the first episode, he's just kind of vibing. The second character, he's like a caricature of what someone might imagine ADHD is, not knowing anyone with ADHD. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's just one of those instances where like, I do think Carrie is like obviously the villain of the show. And so often it's clear that she is looking for an excuse to break up with an incredibly normal person that you and I was going to say hang out with, but I don't know that I'd hang out with this jazz bassist. But like, I'm thinking about like the bisexual episode, another famous episode.
Yeah.
And like, it's so clear that Carrie's the villain of that episode, because she's dating this like hot bisexual guy who is in this like incredible polycule, where like she goes to his house for a party, and he's like, here is my ex-girlfriend and her girlfriend and then her ex-boyfriend and his boyfriend. And here's the kid that they all kind of raised together. And we're just all here hanging out. And it is like a party that you and I would go to. Mm-hmm. And Carrie's whole experience is being like, this is crazy. I can't be here. This is too much. This isn't for me. This is for young people. And
is
then
the
like every time.
Obsolete?
Yeah. And then every time a man walks by, she's like, would you rather be kissing that man than me? And he's like, what? Like, no, be normal. And she's like, tell me the truth. Would you rather fuck me or a man? And he's like, what?
And it doesn't work that way, babe.
Yeah. So I just feel like it's so clear that like she's wrong in that episode, and that these bisexual people, including Alanis Morissette, are awesome.
Yeah, they're like trying to welcome her into the space. They're being so hospitable. And
So I guess, I kind of don't take it that seriously when Carrie is like rejecting a guy for like being too normal and cool and like a person that we would know, you know? Like, it's just like, she hates anything that's not Mr. Big, a literal surrogate for Trump, who is introduced in the first episode as Trump-like, you know? It's just like, we can't trust her judgment. It's whatever.
Yeah. I'm curious how you feel about tokenism and just like that, because there's a piece in here by Adrian Matthias Bell that basically says that when the show tries to be more diverse, like either racially or like with non-binary characters, et cetera, like it kind of just creates more opportunities for the show to fuck up.
Yeah.
And it's kind of more fun when it's more of like a fly on the wall type vibe, where they're like not talking about you or people like you. And I'm curious what you think about that.
Yeah. I interviewed Alison Bechdel and asked her about Sex and the City. And she was like, I'm obsessed with Sex and the City, but I will not watch any of the ones with like a gay plot line because of that, because I don't want it to like touch real life. I want it to just be silly. And I do think that is straight people's zoo. Like, straight people's zoo is, I'm here to have something that has nothing to do with me. And when you're bringing Che Diaz into it, it's kind of like, well, why am I in it now? And there's a lot of stuff like that. That happened with, spoilers, Conclave. Like, I was like, why why are we in it now? Like, leave us alone.
Why did this think this was a fun movie?
So, I mean, I agree that I wouldn't say, like, I wouldn't take away Che Diaz, because I think Che Diaz was such an important moment for culture that, like, it was just so fun that I would never want to take that away. But in general, I do think that there is so much more space for harm when you're introducing like explicitly queer or trans characters or folks of color and trying to be like, look, we're good now, and you're just blowing it like that in a way. And it is kind of a lose-lose, because I think if you make And Just Like That now and you still do the original sins of like making it straight and white exclusively, like, people will also be like, what are you possibly doing?
Right. So
I don't think
do?
I think the only way to win is to like make the show good, which they like didn't know how to do, which is fine, you know, that's fine.
But
I do find in general there is kind of a schism, and I'm going to really generalize by age, and it's okay that it doesn't work perfectly to every person, but I would say in general, like, millennial, older millennial and up, has a lot of like my favorite queer character is, and then we'll name someone who is like not explicitly queer in the text. Right. And then like Gen Z and below really wants it to be explicitly named, and not even just queer. They want it to be like, this person is asexual TM or whatever.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, I think it does feel safer in general to be like, my favorite queer characters are Miranda and Steve. I mean, Miranda eventually becomes queer, but I mean like Sex and the City, like the original right. Sex and the City, my favorite queer characters, Miranda and Steve. Like that feels good to me, because then it can never be JDS, you know? Like,
yeah. You don't have to pick from this limited palette of bad representation, which exactly. is maybe a trap anyway. Yeah.
No, exactly. Yeah. It's nice. And I think once it becomes like real canonical queer representation, it becomes narcissism of small differences. And it's like, well, ooh, I'm yes. non-binary, but I would never press the woke moment button, or I would never finger Miranda in the kitchen while Carrie pees in the Snapple bottle, and thus like this is bad representation or whatever. And it's like, no, like it's just, you know, like we're all different, and that is what becomes
we all
dangerous.
Know each other, but we're all different.
Yeah, we all know we all are seeing each other perform at Joe's Pub, but we are all different.
Right, exactly.
We're doing different shows at Joe's Pub. And so, yeah, I just think that, like, it is important to have some representation sometimes, for sure. I love that. But also when it's, like, clearly going to be, like, one unforced error after another, like, you don't have to worry about it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Chuck, is there anything we didn't ask you about that you want to talk about this book?
Let me look at the book.
I'm holding it.
So speaking of, like, advice that you would give people who are publishing a book, something that happened is that at the very last second, with no known notice, I somehow became responsible for half the book copies.
Oh no.
So now I have 1400 copies of the book in my house, which is more than can be held in one Brooklyn apartment. And so because of that, a couple things are happening. One, I'm like, please buy the book. And the other thing is that I am doing a book tour that I didn't expect to be doing, and I'm kind of planning last minute. And so the tour dates are at girldedpress.com/tour, a likely place for them to be. But I know that in November, I will be in Chicago, Seattle, probably Portland, Oakland, and Philly. And then surely New York will come together. We have to believe. So yeah. At least those places, possibly more. And something that I'm doing on purpose as part of the ethos of the book is trying to sort of follow the Little Puss Press example of making the events like mostly fun party, because I think that book events can be boring, controversially, and that wouldn't it be fun if it was just yet another excuse for queer and trans people to come hang out, especially in sort of like this political moment, TMTM. Yeah. And so I really am making sure that like if it is a classic book event, there is like a bar or other place next door that immediately afterwards, it's like, if you want to come hang out, you know, come hang out.
Always be partying.
Yeah. Always be partying. And by partying, it's like, I'm chilling. I'm having half of one drink, you know? So it's not like rager, but it is like a chance to like hang out and socialize instead of just like walking into the book event, sitting silently, walking out of the book event.
Yeah.
Because I do try to make all of my projects, again, be like a community space for people to spend time together and not just like listen to me, because who cares, you know? So
you have a podcast for that.
Yeah, I have a podcast for that. And then the other thing I'll say that is very short is just that when I made the Fast and Furious book, Too Trans, Too Furious, I didn't realize that a lot of trans people would watch the movies for the first time because of the book. And I never meant that. And I don't think they should. I think they're bad. But I
don't
do
actually.
Feel like it's worth watching like some episodes of Sex and the City if you're going to read the book, because it actually does really help to know who the characters are. And also, like, you learn so much. You learn so much about straight people.
And it's like, it's as one of the contributors, I forget which, says it's like, it's smooth brain time. Like, you know, if you're stressed out, if you're like reading the news, if you're scrolling, just put on one episode of Sex and the City. You'll feel a little better.
That's the thing, is most of the time, these women are not having real problems. And right. So you can just sort of like luxuriate and be like, yeah, you know, like it sucks that Carrie doesn't have space for all her shoes. Like, what are we going to do?
Oh, no.
All right. And since there's some slash fic in the book, which I always love, I would love if we could close out by talking about, do you have any non-canon pairings from the Sex and the City universe that you ship?
Yeah. So I have two thoughts on this. And one is more of a provocation to the world, which is that my friend, who's also in the book, they write about the bisexual episode. They had a dream about Carrie and Miranda slash fic. And then we went on like all of the big fanfic sites, and there is no Carrie Miranda slash fic that exists, which doesn't make any sense.
So fixable.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I'm not saying that it makes sense as a pairing. Like, there's a reason it hasn't been written, but someone's got to do it. But I would say there's that scene where Aiden and Big mud wrestle and Carrie looks on, and I think they should take it all the way.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Tuck, where can people get the book?
Totally. So if you'd like to buy it from your local bookstore and you're in the US or Canada, you should be able to do that. Just ask them to order it for you. They probably won't have it in stock because they don't know about it, but they can easily get it in stock. Otherwise, if you'd like to take a copy out of my household, which I would be grateful for, you can go to thisistrans.info, which is a rotating link that currently goes to the Girl Dad Press store, or just go to girldadpress.com and navigate from there. I can ship to the US, and there will also be a PDF once the book actually comes out on November 7th. And then if you're international, not in the US or Canada, I think you can order it through like the big bookstores like Barnes & Noble that know how to do international shipping. But they might charge you like $40 for shipping, and I don't know that it's worth it. But maybe it is to you. Maybe to you, this is everything.
It's a really good book. It's a really fun read, and I hope that a lot of Dildrick's listeners get the chance to read it.
Well, you've got to read The Secrets of MB's Tour. I mean, I teased it on the back. It's like in the teaser. It says, "Tales from a Tense Sex in the City Bus Tour." You've got to know what happens.
Is there anything else you want to plug in terms of like your social media or anything like that?
Sure. Just the Gender Reveal Podcast, now 14 seasons in. Genderpodcast.com or wherever you're listening to this podcast. And then also the grant, because we mentioned it earlier, genderpodcast.com/grant. And MB, didn't you contribute to Gender Reveal one time? Didn't you do
I did some investigative research on a privacy policy of a bad trans app.
Many such cases of bad trans app. So I think... Yeah, I think the podcast is fun and is my real job that doesn't actively lose a ton of money. So I appreciate people listening to that as well.
Awesome. MB, did you want to plug anything or say where folks can find you?
Yeah, sure thing. I am on Blue Sky at mbbischoff.com. You can read some of my poems at chromato.graphics. And yeah, photographs on glass. The link will be in the description.
And I've been Kate Sloan. You can find me online at katesloan.com, which is also my Blue Sky username. I have two books out, 101 Kinky Things Even You Can Do and 200 Words to Help You Talk About Sexuality and Gender. My music is on YouTube and Bandcamp if you look me up as Kate Sloan. My co-host usually is Billy Lohr. He's at billylohr.com, and I think he'll be back with us next week. I want to say thank you very much to our top-tier Patreon supporters, Twitch101, Amy, Jay, Robin, MV, our most hated patron, Todd, and Natalie. Thank you also to Protodome, who did our theme song. Thank you to Addison Finch, who did our album art. Thank you to our wonderful guest today, Tuck Woodstock, and my wonderful guest host, MV. And thank you to you for listening. Until next time, folks, get out there and live your sexy, dorky life. Should I ask you if you have favorite pieces in the book, or have we already kind of talked through?
I mean, you can only, the problem is then I will have to pick a favorite and then I'll feel bad. But I'm trying to, I'm trying to decide if I have an answer for this.
Because another question I could ask you to close out is if you ship any non-canon pairings from the universe.
unfortunately, I do kind of like love a lot of my children equally and can't pick one. Okay, do I ship any non... Who are the characters of Sex
in the City? I'll set it up like a proper question.
No, totally. I just wanted to make sure I had an answer before you asked, and I'm like still stalling because I'm kind of do I have it?
Yeah.
Okay, I have one. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, cool. Thank you so much, Tuck. This was so much fun. I really do love the book. It's like, it's so good. It's
Thank
really
you.
Good. I hope that our listeners enjoy it. I think that they will.
Thank you. I'm so glad you like it. I really strongly feel like it's actually good. And I wouldn't say that if I didn't believe it, because I feel like the first one, my attitude is, haha, it's so fun that it exists. And this one, I'm like, this one rules and everyone's got to read it.
Yeah. It's really good.